Welcome, reanimated fans. I am H.A. Conrad, here as always with my intrepid co-host, Stuart Tiffin. Hello, Stuart.
Good day, H.A.
We are diving into this week's episode with a recap and review of Black Summer episodes 5 and 6, so we're continuing that. But before we get to that, we have a couple of news items. Last week on Game of Thrones, and this was the huge zombie battle and White Walker style, and so we wanted to dive into that. We have a couple of things to chat about that, and then a couple of tidbits before we get into our review. Not a little light on the news this week, but that's cool. I very eagerly texted you, Stuart, to see if you would watch this.
This is the heart of our problem with East Coast, West Coast.
I know.
You've just finished watching it, and I'm like, it doesn't start for an hour where I am, and you're like, what, WTF over? Why can't we talk about it immediately? And then I finish it, and it's 1 a.m. your time.
Right.
So we have no means of simultaneously talking about these episodes as they're going on.
Yeah, and I was very excited to chat with you about this for a variety of reasons. But I think, you know, like saying before, I think everybody's watched it, hopefully who's had a chance to watch it. So hopefully we're not spoiling anything. But I wanted to see what your overall take on this was, and were you disappointed? I felt like some of the comments from my large group of people that watch this was that, oh man, this just turned into basically a zombie movie. We're of course talking about the Battle of Winterfell. And so just give me a few of your impressions. I'm very curious to hear.
You know, as it was happening, I was wrapped. I was folding laundry, but wrapped, folding laundry, watching, trying to make it out because it was a little dark. And I know that's been a major criticism, but I wasn't gonna like hammer on that too much. I just assumed that that was done on purpose to make it seem chaotic, which it did. And so I accepted that.
I wasn't bothered as much with it. Of course, we are watching it on a very large screen, yeah, with a projector, so maybe it was a little bit better for us just, you know, in terms of how we were watching it.
I'm
so
surprised to hear that, because often projectors don't deal with dark darks very well.
Well, so maybe that's why we were a little bit more forgiving of it,
yeah.
But
you're like, what's that artifacting in the corner? Oh, that's just the projector.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I felt like they were trying to show the chaos of battle. I also thought it was a little bit of a, they didn't want you to see everything, and they have come out and said that that was in part the reason that they did some of it this way.
Yeah.
I do think that compression for the stream is a big issue, and I've noticed it a couple of times, but more so in this episode, obviously. You know, overall, I actually, okay, so when I texted you, I had to actually turn off my phone because I was like, I can't mess it up for him. But I wanted to ask you, their battle tactics in the beginning drove me crazy. So
I've been doing
That was something I was like, I have to talk to Stuart about this, because
yeah,
I really bothered by it.
This has been covered now. People have been talking
about
this.
Ad nauseum, I know.
Week. But yeah, one of the first awesome articles I read about that was actually in Wired, written by an Army,
yes,
officer, and he just did.
Maybe we should put that in here.
Yeah, we could put
that
in
the show
notes.
Probably good.
But then I've seen, you know, since then, like Variety and other people have gone out and found military strategists who have broken down how badly the tactics went. I've even seen people using the Total War Warhammer 2 engine to like replay the battle with zombies versus humans. And you know, showing how the catapults shouldn't have been in the rank just behind the cavalry, and how they threw their cavalry away, like by charging light cavalry into a charging horde that isn't afraid of anything.
That they can't see.
So yeah, they totally wasted the Dothraki. They totally wasted their catapults. The trench should have been further away from the castle. You know, thing after thing, and then when the trench wasn't that far away from the castle and they successfully lit it on fire, why weren't they taking advantage of that to pour arrows into the ranks of the,
yeah,
zombies as they were standing there?
Like flaming arrows or something, man.
I mean, the obsidian arrowheads that they were using did the job, right? I don't think you even had to get a kill shot to take a zombie down with an obsidian weapon. But it was just, there were so many problems with that. And then even before you get to that, just the way that they had decided to go from a controlled battle space into a wide open plain against,
right,
a numerically superior force. A terrible idea, because it means you're going to get enveloped. And so, like, there are ways that they could have tried to, anyway, And depending on how much time they had, which it doesn't seem like they had all that much time, honestly. But that's one of the things that people are talking about is like, you basically ceded the battlefield to the enemy by where you chose to fight it.
Right. And also, I mean, just in terms of the tactic, obviously Daenerys and Jon are hanging out there waiting for the Night King to make his appearance. And then she saw the Dothraki get killed and goes nuts, throws that all away. But even just sort of using one of your biggest advantages are your dragons. Yeah. And I didn't feel like, even with all the fog and stuff coming in, I get it. And I get that that's what they were trying to show, is that even they were sort of put at a disadvantage, but there were moments when they could have helped things a lot more. And I just was really bothered by that, because you do have a ton of people who do know a lot about war. And not to, you know, you've got the Unsullied, you've got, Jorah Mormont.
Everybody has been at war for decades.
The only people that you don't are some of the peasants and stuff that you've enlisted that don't know anything, and those go down pretty quickly. But the Dothraki and the Unsullied are not new to this. They are also horribly fearless, which is, you know, we saw some of that going on. The Unsullied held the line. And I guess I was bothered by how, I don't want to say stupid, but just, I don't believe that this is how this battle would have gone down with this particular group of people. So that definitely bothered me.
Frankly, I also had a problem with how the Battle of the Bastards went down. And people have pointed to that as like an example of good strategy. And it's been 2 years since I've seen that episode. But I also, like, when they get encircled by this ring of shields, it makes me bananas. But yeah, so the point I'm making is that there is a precedent on this show for them to be like, let's go for cinematic oomph rather than strategic.
I think you still could have gotten there and it would have been more effective if you had shown that they were doing everything that they possibly could have.
If they had done everything right and still gotten their ass.
Right. Like, I feel like that would have been a much more effective battle. And even all the magic and all the like advantages that you have are not working, I thought that would have been better. Another piece, which just, you know, I did complain about this to my friends, was that, like, and I know that they had to have moments where there was sort of lulls, or else you get people kind of tired out by all that sort of unrelenting action. But they basically, I kind of felt like they changed the rules about the walkers. You see them all, like, almost in the way that we saw in World War Z, you see them swarming in a way that is just seems like just inevitable that they're going to overrun everything. Mm-hmm. But then you jump into the library and they're just kind of walking around.
There's
like
just a
zombies.
Couple of them in there, but yeah, they do.
Yeah,
kind of...
but they're, even their movements, everything about them is just a little bit slower. And, you know, I get what they were trying to do with it, but it bothered me that they switched.
Right?
And they're just totally chill.
But this is how they've been north of the wall before everything kicked off.
They were silent.
They were quiet, but then they could go from quiet stalkers to
really,
like,
fast,
rattly, terrifying, pursuers.
I guess I just felt like the transition here didn't totally make sense to me, because all the stuff was going on outside. So things that would basically cause them to be so manic, I think, were going on. So I was a little bit troubled by that. But in terms of the mythology with the walkers, so, I mean, obviously we have this week's episode coming up, so we'll see what happens. I'm not totally convinced that this threat is all the way gone, just because Bran is totally playing super, super creepy.
What was he doing?
Like, I don't know. He's being super creepy. That's what he's good at.
Like, he went into warg mode and went into some ravens and then came back later. Like, that was all he did. Where did those ravens go? What was their job? Were they doing scouting, or were they going somewhere?
Well, you know, or were they bringing the Night King to him, is what I kind of think. But, I think that, I don't know. We'll see if they're all done. But basically, in the very badass ending shot, which I did like, I just loved it, there's much more of a vampire mythology to this than a walker mythology. So
you mean
basically,
a hierarchy?
They're all good. Well, because, you know, when Arya takes out the Night King, that they all disappear, or at least we see them all disappear. There's some people that are conjecturing a lot about Caster's kids and the little baby walkers. And but we saw everybody destroyed. So I'm assuming like everybody that the Night King has created is gone, but we'll see what happens tonight.
So before we conject, mm-hmm. that's the verb. Before we talk about whether or not there are any more zombies on this show, were there any standout zombies for you? I mean, for me, the giant zombie in that fight with Lyanna Mormont.
Oh my gosh, that was
incredible.
Great.
Incredible. The dragon zombie was incredible as far as effects go.
I knew that she was going to go. I think we all did, but they did a great job, I think, at highlighting her death and sacrifice, and that was very cool.
She was a badass the whole time she was on the show, and she never was like, taller than 4 feet.
I know, and I really loved that she was, you know, basically up there running her men and her little army, and like Sansa and Tyrion are down in the crypt. So it's like she's like this, you know.
Nobody's
going to
put
kid.
Her in the crypt. That girl would know.
I know. But she was awesome. So that was a great standout. I thought that the zombie dragon was great. One thing, I don't know, the conjecturing came across that Jon wasn't just yelling at the dragon, that he knew Arya was coming. And so was trying to distract the dragon. I don't know if I buy that. If they were trying to do that, I don't think that storytelling was very clear. But I thought that whole confrontation and the whole zombie dragon was pretty awesome.
There's a scene where Arya and the Hound, maybe Beric, come into like a hall after the long fight, and it's just filled with bodies. And I think that did a really good job of illustrating that this fight has gone all over Winterfell, because you kind of lose track of it. I mean, obviously, it's been crazy. You haven't really had a sense of what's going on since the fight started.
And I also love that because Arya knows that place, she knows it.
Yeah.
She's like able to get through it in ways that other people probably wouldn't. And I really enjoyed that whole thing. I Beric's sacrifice I thought was amazing. And I did really, I mean, I really loved her exchange with Melisandre, like I just thought
I was
that was awesome.
I was having some serious recall issues, like trying to remember the last time they had a scene together. I should have rewatched the whole series, I feel like.
Basically, she goes and she buys Gendry, and Arya like freaks out, and she tells her, she has this weird little prophecy moment, and basically says that she's going to close some eyes, i.e. kill people. So she said brown eyes, green eyes, blue eyes. And that's what they were about. And that she saw darkness in Arya's soul. And I think Arya at the time just thought she was being like creepy. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting exchange, and I liked that. And then, I mean, look, the whole Night King thing, I still think Bran, maybe there's something up with Bran. Something, he's just been creepy from the get-go, and now he's even creepier. So let's see what happens with him. But I think there's darkness in his soul, too.
He wasn't creepy in the first episode. I was trying to... I thought that I might have enough time to rewatch the entire series, so I tried
to.
Okay,
maybe not the first episode, but...
had no opportunity,
in his reappearance this season, he has been the creepiest, weirdest little creeper.
Yeah.
I mean, he just sits around covered in furs in a chair, and it's
staring
just,
at people.
Yeah.
But then every so often, again, breaking out and being like, hey, Theon, you're a good dude. Now go kill yourself.
Yep, pretty much.
you said you won your Deadpool. I think I lost mine because I had so many people pegged to become White Walkers. And the only people...
The only one that I was convinced was going to bite it in this was, I did think Brienne was based upon the last episode, and so I did not get her, but I got just about everybody else.
So you had minor characters on your Deadpool. Mine didn't have Lyanna or Theon. Like, Theon was on.
Oh, I had Lyanna. I had Jorah. I said that the Mormonts were dead. We're toast. I got, and so I won that.
Wow.
I did think that they were going to kill off a few major characters. I did think Gendry was going to get it.
Gendry didn't even show. Like, where was he? Was in the beginning, and I didn't see him. Another character who completely disappeared was Ghost. Ghost runs with the Dothraki into the zombie horde, and then you never see him again.
But spoilers, did you watch the incoming
thing?
I've
seen the article.
He's around.
There's like a two legs of him in a scene in tonight's episode, But still, it's just frustrating the way that they, I mean, obviously they had 100 characters that they had to tell their stories. But Ghost seems to get like kicked to the curb a little.
Well,
too
it's
often.
Like I just don't think they had the budget for the direwolves. But I wish that they had done a little bit more with them because they just kind of go by the wayside, and they are a pretty integral piece of the
left.
Whole thing. Well, yeah. So
and one of them is MIA and has been since season one, also.
Right. No, she made a reappearance.
I know, but yeah, she once. In the book, I feel like there was more of a, either way. Anyway, so yeah, it was a hell of an episode. I was really happy with it. I am a little bit concerned that we're done with the undead, other than the fact that the mountain is also undead, and that the fire god seems to, or his people seem to be able to raise the dead. So there's still some opportunities for reanimation as far as this podcast goes.
True. Let's see what happens. Let's hold tight for tonight. I'll try not to spoil it for you when I watch it earlier than you, but I'm excited to see this evening's episode. Yeah. I will say the one thing that was missing from this whole thing for me, which I really thought they were going to do, I thought that one of the respites that they would do in the middle of battle would be to like cut to Cersei like lounging on some divan drinking wine in the middle of this.
That would have been a funny break from the combat.
And I kind of thought that that's how they were going to help break things up a little bit, but they did not. So, yeah. Oh well.
And
missed opportunity.
To that point, and the point you made before about like the way that they changed the pacing, I've seen some review, not criticism, but the opposite, some praise for the director, I forget his name, starts with an S, at how deftly he managed to handle huge combat, massive scale combat with these like slowing down scenes in the crypt and in the Godswood. And also with Arya in the library. Oh, one final point. In the crypt, totally nailed it. Called that one. All the Starks came back to life and broke out of their sarcophagi. Gotta be awkward for Sansa to see like great-grandma, great-grandpa coming after and killing her people while she did nothing.
And just taunt out there. Though, I mean, you know, she did grip her knife. I did love Tyrion, though. I always loved Tyrion.
They didn't do anything. They had that whole moment where people are now shipping them hard. And I'm like, oh, okay, so they're going to run out like Butch and Sundance and do something. But they run out and then still just
kind
of watch. They would just watch.
Yeah. Too late. But, Arya took care of business as she always does. But anyway, I thought they were going to do a little bit more with that. And I actually had a theory that there was some secret passage where the Night King was going to come in below somehow. But that was not correct. But... you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens on tonight's episode. So let's figure it out, and then we'll do a more. Hopefully, once we have the season over, we can talk about walkers or not. So let's see if there's any more action.
Word.
So in terms of other news, a little bit as we mentioned, a little bit like this week, you found something about World War Z, the game.
Oh
correct?
No, I found it in it. I've been playing it a little bit.
How is it?
Because I was really interested in how that horde mechanic and swarm mechanic would work in that video game, because it looks so cool in the trailers, and it is cool. The way that they climb up walls is a lot of fun to disrupt, because if you have a multiple grenade launcher, that nothing gives you quite as much pleasure as knocking down a pyramid of zombies from World War Z. The game itself is not really my cup of tea. It is very much like a Left 4 Dead sort of clone with swarm mechanics thrown on top of it and a little more storytelling, I guess. And some of the level design I haven't really been keen on, but it takes you through several different locations. There's like 12 different episodes or 9 or 12 different scenes and scenarios, and they're adding more, including like New York and Jerusalem. I forget what the third one is. Might be Korea. Yeah, the mechanics are okay. It would be a lot more fun, I think, if I was playing with a group of friends, and I've been so far not playing it online just to try and get the mechanics down before I dive into the unfriendly confines of the internet and get, you know, critiqued for my lack of machine gun skills or something. But yeah, so I just wanted to point out that I've been playing it. The swarm mechanics are pretty nifty, but it's like $30, I think, for that game, and I'm not sure for me that it was worth the price of admission yet, but I'm the jury's still out. That's all.
Okay, cool.
Then finally, yeah, so Fear the Walking Dead premieres June 2nd. I think we'd already mentioned that, but I don't know, AJ, if you've been seeing any of their promotional stuff.
I have not. So I've tried to stay away from it. The only thing I mentioned to you was that there was definitely some Subway ads where it looks like an undead Dwight.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that is deliberate or not, or we'll see what happens.
One of the other things that I feel like I've been seeing in their Instagram ads is more walkies. People speaking into radios, and I was really hoping that was going to go away.
Gosh, I wish that would go away. You know how much I loathe that particular device. I think it's really sloppy. But do you want to jump into our Black Summer recap?
Just as soon as I let everybody know that the Passage Renewal Watch is still ongoing, that poor cast and crew are waiting to find out if their show gets renewed or canceled.
Ooh, let's see what happens. I'm betting it gets canceled, but maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Maybe they can do more with it. But based upon what I saw, I don't know that there's going to be any appetite for that. But we'll see.
Yeah.
We can only hope, I know this sounds terrible, but we can only hope that maybe somebody else does it better at some point. But I think in this iteration, it's just not doing it for me.
Mm. That's an expensive proposition, but yeah.
But not totally unprecedented. So we'll see. So where we left off, we are doing episodes 5 and 6.
That's right.
Of Black Summer.
Diner and the Heist.
Right. And both of these, again, Diner is around 45 minutes long.
43. Long. Yeah. It's one of the longer ones of the whole series.
And then Heist is around 30, which is pretty fast.
Yeah.
And once again, I was very impressed with how much they fit into this, how much character building, how much you get to learn about the group dynamics, and this story of this group going forward. And then, you know, they managed to bring the two groups together, which is great. But let's start out with Diner. And Diner is with our section of survivors that were in the car crash because one of the trucks was trying to chase them off the road. So it's Sun and William. Then the three from the bad truck are
Carmen, Manny, and Phil.
Yep.
And outside are Barbara and Marvin.
Correct. But in undead form. And, you know, they're in a spot, and it's interesting because there's a lot of tension between the two groups, and because one group caused this situation. And it's interesting because Phil is just kind of like, oh, we're in a good spot. We have supplies and whatever. And he's definitely like trying to be divisive. He has tried to set himself up as the leader, like as an alpha. He kind of tries to get like, you know, it's interesting how divisive he is even just from the get-go, but he kind of oscillates from being, hey, we're good people and this stuff happens and, oh, all this was Marvin, to being like, oh, we've got to like basically leave people behind. You know, it's like a really fast transition.
How well do you really know any of these people?
True.
So he does a really good job. I feel like, honestly, this is one of the best episodes of this show.
It's good.
And
it's good.
It's the setup, putting, five characters into a confined space with just two zombies outside. So much of it shot with in single takes and with one camera. Like, there are entire long scenes with lots of dialogue. Not a lot of action necessarily, except when they go outside when they do their four-man raid outside, that's all done in one take. From the planning to execution to retreat.
Yep.
And it's an incredible scene. And I did not pick up on that until the second watching that how deft that was. But this Marvin guy, as you're saying, is a total schemer. And you definitely don't trust him, and you don't trust his teeth. So what did I say?
You said Marvin. Marvin's the walker outside.
Marvin is also a schemer, but he's dead. But Phil, that guy, don't trust him, and he's got weird teeth.
Yes, he does. Like really dirty, nasty teeth of the kind you only see on these kinds of shows.
Yeah.
So, we have Sun, who doesn't speak English, but she does. It's so funny because they really give her these long, like, moments where she's talking and conveying and communicating. William is definitely listening to her, or see, like, it's, he reacts to her. It's like he doesn't understand Korean, but he definitely gets the gist. Yeah. And she gets the gist about what is going on. I like how this is part of this. It's, and the other thing that I really liked about this is that, you know, William and Son have not known each other very long. He knows very few pieces of information about her, but he does know that she has his back. And we do know that Carmen and Manny are a couple. And
that that Phil doesn't know their names even, because he calls Carmen Carla.
Right. So they have a tenuous sort of connection at best. So it's interesting because you have these five people who really don't have a ton of, other than maybe Carmen and Manny, don't really have a ton of reason to trust each other. And so it's them trying to work out how they're going to get out of this situation. But there's also that distrust, like, what if somebody betrays another person? And in fact, like, Phil is definitely trying to do that, to game it to his advantage. And it really sets it up because William is like, there's this moment between William and Phil where Phil's like, oh, how well do you know her? Meaning Son. And William's like, I don't know her well, but I know her, and she's good, and she saved my life. And he is very much dedicated. You know what kind of a person he is, and we've gotten more about how he is as we've seen this go on. But this whole conversation sets up all you need to know about these two characters. And I don't think it was a huge shock that Phil tries to betray people. Eventually, he's already trying to lay the groundwork that Son is the weakest link. And basically, when they have their first plot to try to get rid of the walkers outside, it's Son's job to tap on the glass to get to distract them. And I will admit, when this whole thing first happened, did you have a moment, Stuart, where you thought they were just going to try to, like, take off and leave them there? Because that's what I thought they were going to do.
I had no idea. Honestly, this show is pretty good at resisting any of my kind of, like, ability to predict what's going to happen next. So no, but one of the things that I was thinking about when I was watching this episode was the way it treated xenophobia and that mm-hmm. like attempt to split the herd, as it were. Then when you realize who's in this diner, it's a Korean woman, three Latinos, and a white, like, sketchy, yep. really sketchy, like, the sketchiest white dude.
And he's the only one that's talking about things in that term.
About being divisive.
In those terms, yeah.
Because Carmen is trying to bond with Son about being being from another place, right? Because she's like, we came over the border.
Yep.
They wouldn't let you on the truck because you didn't have papers. So she's finding points of association with Son.
Right.
While Phil is trying to drive wedges between people. And right. I think people eventually, I think they just realize that that's what he is. And because Carmen also was like, oh, but do you know William? He shouldn't mess with Phil because he does not know who he's messing with. Like, she understands that Phil is also dangerous.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, the other thing that I thought was interesting. So they're listening to Phil, and Phil's trying to set him up as a leader, but it was Phil's, you know, they're like, Carmen's like, go for the head, and Phil's like, no, go for the knees. And it's like, oh,
it's not a
you're
bad
dead
strategy,
man.
You know, like, no, knock him, like, down, and then you can knock him in the
I
head.
I guess. But then when it actually goes down, he didn't do anything. And when they come back and regroup, there's more tension in the group. And it's really set up in a clever way, because you've got basically what feels like the three that had been in the pickup truck against the two that had been in the car that they were chasing. So you've got William and Son versus Phil, Carmen, and Manny. But I love that Son turns the tables because she notices a cut on Phil's arm. And mm-hmm. whether that is a bite or not,
is what it is.
It's very smart, and it causes enough doubt, but also Phil has been already doing this himself just in how he acts, that it's very quick thinking. And they ultimately, Phil's plan was to basically put Son out there as, like, food for the walkers, and it turns on him very quickly, which I loved. And I really liked the dynamic that suddenly it's like, okay, we all know now who can be trusted, and they just toss Phil out there.
And let's talk about this plan too. You throw out anybody, whether it's...
And they're going to become one.
within second, like 2 seconds, and then you're just going to have three of them after you. This is not a plan that was going to work in any scenario.
No.
The only way that they were getting out of this was if A, their first foray outside had worked, which it super didn't, or B, the way that it actually worked, which was reinforcements arrived, even though they were pretty messed up. Because as I was saying during the school episode, these people have not been eating or drinking, and they are they are super dehydrated and wiped out to the point where Rose is hallucinating on her way to the diner. And
she loses her really cool jacket.
You know, it's understandable. It's probably 90 degrees, but yeah, she should have tied it off. And Spears sits down and drops his gun, like, right before they get to the diner. And you're just like, oh, yeah, these guys are at the end of their rope.
Right.
They managed to pull it together, though, pretty, a little bit, like, 180-ish, when they, and maybe it's just adrenaline, when they come up, like, they're about to go and, you know, they have two bullets left and they're going to try and kill two zombies, which is not kind of their success rate so far with guns.
But I love how Spears calls it out. He's like, I only have two. And then Rose is like, it's enough. And Spears just kind of has this weird little shrug and like, well, yeah, I guess, you know, there's like definitely this moment of doubt. So I love that there is doubt because, and they know how hard these things are to get rid of. So that's pretty cool. And I also thought the choreography here was great because we already know what's been going on inside the diner. And then we get to see it from the Rose Spears perspective, which I thought was awesome. That was pretty cool.
It's really fascinating to watch because you're looking at him walking up behind a zombie. There's nothing going on inside the diner. And so we start to think, well, where are they on the timeline? Like, have the other people already done everything? The actions that we know are coming do happen, and it sets everything off. And it's a really, I'm kind of surprised they didn't end the episode with that scene of them all standing over the bodies, but they added another scene in there of them like kitting up and leaving.
Yep.
But I thought it was a really satisfying end to this episode, and really good tension and drama inside the diner. So honestly, it was like all my thumbs up.
Yep.
For this one.
And they use the set really well. I really liked how you get to see a little piece of what each character is dealing with here. And it also solidified, this whole thing just solidifies the bond between this team of people, this team of survivors. So I loved that.
Earl gets his only line of the entire show in this episode.
That's true.
Hey.
So it also lays the groundwork for the next episode, which is called Heist. And basically the group knows that they want to get to the stadium, and they set this up in the diner episode where basically Carmen and Manny know where there are weapons, but it's in the downtown area, which is a bit overrun.
Let me interject here. You say, yeah, Carmen and Manny know. Carmen and Manny know a lot. When you come back and look at this.
I was going to be like, okay, let's talk about
Not only do they know about this outpost, the way it works, the layout. Yes, they know all of that, but they also have this other piece of knowledge, which is there's a herd of zombies out there.
Correct.
And so they are like the people with all the knowledge, and it's kind of crazy that they gave all that to this one entity. It's two people, but they're basically a team. So I just wanted to throw that out there that Manny and Carmen are like, wow, super knowledgeable.
And maybe this gets answered, and maybe it doesn't, because we're going to dive into the next episode. But, you know, you wonder why they are out on their own. Were they part of this outpost?
If they were, why does nobody recognize them?
Right. You know? But I think somebody does, because he lets them in. They get let in.
They get let in because they have contraband.
Yeah, but they're left to wander around. Like, yeah. And people seem to know them, or at least know that they're sort of a part of this. Like, so there's something there, I think. And maybe that never gets explained, but yes, they have an enormous amount of knowledge. And you know, maybe it's because the Marvin thing didn't work out and they didn't seem to know Marvin very well. Just Phil did. So, maybe there's a little bit more going on with these two than meets the eye. But they basically plan this whole heist on this, I don't even know I guess outpost, because these people aren't, there's definitely some military guys in there, but it's a hodgepodge of people in this outpost.
I didn't get military from inside. It just felt criminal all the way through.
It's criminal, but I think that there's a mix of people in there. And
I mean, you might think that there's military because when they first arrived there, there's a shot of those two soldiers on the roof. But I paused the show this time around watching it, and they have a map on a piece of brown paper showing times and entrances, and they have arrows. So they've been staking out the outpost.
Yeah. But in any case, they end up at this outpost, and their sort of plan, I don't know, their plan, they break off into two groups.
It's a complicated plan.
It's a very complicated plan, but this plan basically gets them weapons. It reunites them with our favorite.
with good old Lance, who has been taking his escapism to new highs, so to speak.
Yes. Yes. So he's a little messed up. And, you know, we've got a lot of, in this particular episode, they're showing the story from different points of view. So it keeps backing up and you get to see it from other points of view.
To me, even though this is a 30-minute episode, it feels longer, I think, because of all of these different perspectives and the way that the story is played out to me. I don't know if that's a criticism, it might be, but it felt like longer than 30 minutes. But also, when we talk about complicated plan, yeah, they split into two groups to go inside. But then inside, each group splits up even more. And it's pretty, it's honestly an audacious plan in that it even worked. Because how did they know that Rose was going to get taken aside? Or maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't expect that. You know, and then inside, Rose and William go off to turn off the lights. Whereas Spears and Sun and Manny go to find the
Carmen
weapons.
And William. Rose and William.
Sorry, these names are all crazy. They're not crazy names. It's just my brain is crazy. So they split up into all these other subgroups that are mixed from the. You know, so it's a very complicated plan, but to me, it's kind of incredible that it even works.
So it is incredible, and also, based upon some of the titles, was Carmen supposed to do what she did? And start this panic? Was that part of the plan or was that not part of the plan?
Because honestly, that seems to be the biggest thing that got him closest to backfiring.
Right. And and I know that there was like chaos and everything, and maybe that was intentional, but it didn't feel like it was. And it felt like she had a personal thing going on with that guy.
I don't know that they knew one another.
There was something there, but in any case, by the skin of their teeth, everybody gets out except for Manny, unfortunately.
And let's also talk about this group, their morals, and what they do to the poor guy who's guarding the gun closet.
Yeah, they kill him.
He is Joe Normal Dude. He has a pistol, but he's like, whenever you see a scene of a guard and he's just looking at his gun, like blowing into it, he's like looking at it like it's a foreign object. And when Spears approaches him, he's like, "What's up, man?" And then he just beats him to death while the guy's saying, "Dude, stop it. Ow, don't."
Yeah, and then Sun really gets
into
it.
Sun stabs him in the head. Yeah, it's honestly kind of insane that they go there. I don't know. How did you feel when you saw that?
I felt the same way, and I felt like the risks outweighed the benefit just because there's just such a slim chance of getting out alive. And I know that they did. And obviously they did, but like Manny didn't, and it's amazing that more of them didn't succumb to whatever was happening in there. So I feel like this was an audacious plan to be going into with people that you just are getting to know. So that was sort of my take on it. But again, it's a show and they have to move along the plot. And I guess this shows that there's a lot more skill there than we thought. Specifically Sun, who, as we see, seems to know her way around a weapon. Just in terms of loading the weapon that she gets. Like, she seems really excited about having the new artillery.
Mac 10? Or no, maybe. I don't know what that is. But yeah, she goes for this little submachine pistol, which I think Zombie Apocalypse maybe makes sense, but they tend to be full auto all the time, which, I don't have to say anymore.
I know you don't. But in any case, I think that this was... I liked how they shot it. I liked how they told the story from the different perspectives. It didn't drag for me. I thought it was good. But then it also introduced the fact that while Manny's gone And so there's that. And we've got, I may have ended up seeing part of the next episode. So I think,
yeah, this, I did too.
They introduce the next thing, but basically we find out that the army guys are not with the group, and that introduces another set of a plot line.
So by the time when I first watched this, I had forgotten who these two army guys were, but they are the same army guys from the first episode.
And I did recognize them when they showed them on the roof. So I was like, oh, okay, so maybe they're going to reunite.
And it was pretty interesting also the second time I was watching this that they keep the screen focused. Like when they're looking through binoculars at the group down on the ground, they are centered on Spears the entire time. So yeah. I think that they have never forgotten
who he is.
And so that's why they're so interested in this group is my, you know, would be my guess. And then the look when they, I mean, is that in the next episode when they yeah. come face to face with them? Okay. Then we don't have to go into that. But, yeah, there was also a moment in this episode when I was convinced that Spears was going to let Sun die in the air duct.
That was a little bit ambiguous at first, and then they, you know, he comes through. So generally, he comes through when he needs to be clutch. He is. So there's that. I will admit, just with Lance and how useless he is. Like, I can't believe he got out of there, but I think that's sort of part of the beauty of that character. He just sort of, like, gets out and falls in back into surviving all the time.
Considering how dead weight he is in that scene, it's not like Rose is like, oh, finally, here's this guy who we really relied on in the earlier episodes. She's like, he was kind of a liability before. Now he's high and a liability.
Right.
I definitely have to save him.
One thing that did bother me about this episode is that they played up a lot about how crazy the downtown area was, that this weapons depot was in an area of town that was a hot spot, basically. Mm-hmm. And we did not see any infected, any walkers.
No, they cut right to them going arriving. In, yeah.
They just arrive and there's like nothing around there. And we don't, the first ones that we see are the ones that they create within the complex. So I thought that was a little bit, in terms of storytelling, I felt like you didn't get the sense of how dangerous it was that this area of town was in. You know, so that bothered me a little bit. But other than that, I thought this was a good episode. Everybody had their jobs. Everybody did their jobs, you know, and then we're set for the next section. So at this point, we're more than halfway through. There's only, what, two episodes left? Three episodes left? Two?
Two left. Yeah.
And I still don't, like, the criticisms that I have seen launched at this, at least at this point, are not bothering me. I mean, there's a few storytelling pieces that I'm, you know, a little bit skeptical of, but and a little bothered by, but nothing. I still think that this has been a pretty solid group, like a solid series, and I've enjoyed it. And so I don't know why people are getting so upset about it, but I just think that this is one of the better pieces I've seen. And also, as I said, like the fact that these episodes are so short, they're packing a lot in, they're doing a lot with character development, in a very successful way. They're using their time to the best advantage. I really like it.
Yeah, honestly, the diner is the most dialogue heavy episode we've had. And they've proved that they can do dialogue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Drive also had a fair amount of dialogue, too.
Right.
But it's just, they're banging in the right places. They're doing, like, action, they're doing tension, and they're able to do character development, like you said. And they do a great job in Diner of developing more characters. And you don't really get a lot of character development in Heist, but what you do get is crazy action and all these different viewpoints showing the same kind of things happening in the chronology. Right. So it's two successful episodes. Diner was better. Right. Heist was still pretty good. And
the other thing I do like, especially about the Diner episode, is how scary they make these zombies. And that these only two are such a threat to these. Like it's really good. Like there's five humans. They are outnumbering them. These are not easy to get rid of. They're not easy to dispatch. And so I feel like the weight of that when Carmen's talking about a horde is really terrifying. Oops, because
yeah, man.
If this is two, then what does like a total like massive group of these things look like? You know, if we have five people against two and we can barely even get out of a diner, what does that look like down the road when you're trying to get away from this massive horde of them? And they also discuss the fact that Manny and I'm sorry, I forget her name. This is terrible.
Carmen?
You know, the other zombie that got shot out of the car.
Barbara.
I can't remember. Barbara.
Marvin and Barbara.
Marvin and Barbara, they discuss the fact that they were not bitten, that they just died.
Yep.
So they know that that's an issue.
So they're still figuring out how this thing works, too, which is why their plan to send someone out to feed the zombies is, it's believable because they don't know the rules still somehow.
Right, right. So anyway, that I thought was really great. I thoroughly enjoyed Diner. I thought that was just a fantastic episode. And I liked Heist too. I agree with you on a few points, but in terms of like, you know, let's move this thing along. But I thought it was good. I thought it was also good to see, okay, this is a depot where people have weapons, and what do they got going on? They got drugs. They're like using people, like women. They're it's not, it's sort of like
the point den of iniquity, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's that going on too. But it also sets our group apart as being different. And you know, just by association, that poor guy guarding the gun closet becomes just as horrible as the people in this depot, even though he might not be, he just might be surviving. But they don't care. So they're like, we're going to take you out. You're not part of our group. So, I thought that was good. So I look forward to wrapping up the series with you, and I've enjoyed it. And so hopefully the next two don't disappoint me. And I've managed to stay spoiler-free, so we'll see.
Well, I mean, if the next two disappoint you, you can always rest easy on the fact that the next two are like 25 minutes and 20 minutes long. So they'll be over before you know it.
All right. With that, I think we're ready to wrap up, and we'll talk about the conclusion of Black Summer next week. And maybe we'll have some more Game of Thrones tidbits, but maybe we should save that for another episode, depending on what happens.
Let's find out.
All right. So if you have any comments about Black Summer, leave us your comments. Send us an email, reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us, reanimatedpcast, or leave a note on our site, reanimatedpodcast.com.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for listening, and bye-bye.
Ciao.